When gardening is part of your life, it brings so much. Healthy eating, the freshest, most local produce, and playing in the dirt. At BonniePlants.com, you'll find all you need to succeed. When you grow Bonnie veggie and herb plants in beds or containers, you'll know where your food comes from. Homegrown veggies and herbs ready for cooking, eating, and enjoying. And you did it. So get growing with Bonnie Plants.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Sharp and Hot. This is episode 30. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, and I have gotten some sleep since last week. I'm not feeling quite as sleep deprived as I was. And on Matt's recommendation, I got all the way down to downloading a meditation app for my phone, but I haven't yet started using it. But I did download it, and I have bought a candle in the Goya aisle at the supermarket. So I'm not quite meditating yet, but I'm getting very close. And the extra hours of sleep that my kid has allowed us to have has definitely changed my outlook on things from last week. Matt is off today. He is working on his tan, but I have two guests joining me in the studio, which I am very excited about, as I spent the weekend with my family building 5 raised beds in our vegetable garden at home. Editor-in-chief at Organic Gardening Magazine, Ethne Clark. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. And Maggie Cheney, director of farms and education for EcoStation New York and the Bushwick Campus Farm, which is nearby Roberta's Pizza, where we are broadcasting from. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for coming out on Earth Day. Totally coincidental, but I was driving and I was like, perfect, Earth Day, and we'll talk about gardening, which is very exciting.
Exactly right.
So on episode 28, I had a writer of Organic Gardening Magazine's Dig, Plant, Grow initiative on Sharp and Hot. And Ethne, I was wondering if you could give us an overview of this program from your perspective. What is it? Who can access it? How do we get kids in the dirt?
Well, anybody can access it because it's a free PDF download on organicgardening.com. And it was written for us by Meredith Hill, who is a teacher at Columbia Junior High School here in New York. And Meredith and I have kind of a 4-year history going back to when we met at the Union Square Market. And it was the last day of the event that Organic Gardening was hosting. And she came up to me in the pouring rain and she said, I have this English literature class that I'm teaching, and my subject is food and sustainability. Well, that immediately rang a bell for me because, you know, seventh grade kids, they haven't got the cynicism yet, and they still have the curiosity. And so her program was to have them research the subject and then write it up and do reports. And she said, could organic gardening help in any way? And I said, why, let's do a magazine. So that turned into a lovely online magazine called Fresh, Young Voices for Food and Sustainability. And we had 3 classes come from the high school over the course of the years. They went to the Rodale family farm and got the history of organics in the United States. Then they went out to the Rodale Institute, where they got the science of organics and all those wonderful little mycorrhizae and that whole piece, and compost, of course. And then came to the editorial offices and learned about the mechanics of putting a magazine together. And it was just thrilling to watch these kids come from the inner city and go, oh, I don't want to sit on the dirt. I don't like it. There might be worms. To leaving at the end of the day with the plants for their community garden that they'd started with the school, talking about what they would be growing next, and then diving into a compost program. And it's just, you know, just taken off. And so we based the curriculum on that experience, and it's available, as I say, to anyone on organicgardening.com.
That is awesome. Awesome. And Maggie, your program is similar in that you get kids and your community members into the dirt, but rather than a curriculum that can be used anywhere, people come to you, right? So give us an overview of your program.
So I work at the Bushwick campus, which is a high school that houses four public high schools. And we all share the same campus, and we actually built up 4 years ago a large 50 by 15 foot greenhouse on the campus. We have...
Can I interrupt you for 1 second? When you say campus, I think like my undergraduate, but I know it's in Bushwick. So
Yeah, there's a piece of lawn that used to be a warm-up section of the soccer field, but it was no longer being used, and it had trash building up from the neighborhood. The campus itself has some green spaces near the softball field, so we've filled in wherever we could around this space that is, you know, huge chain link fences up 20 feet surrounding the campus, but it is, we make it as green and as full of food and energy as humanly possible.
Okay.
And that's been really the efforts of the high school students visioning this process, actually building the greenhouse themselves.
Right.
I work for a nonprofit, so we partner with the school, with the principals, with the teachers to create curriculum with them that they use directly, you know, walking their students out to the farm. And we also do consulting work for other schools in New York City. So around 15 schools we've worked with to kind of share our tips and tricks in a huge city like New York.
That's amazing. I taught middle school for 4 years in the Bed-Stuy section of Brooklyn. And one of the most memorable experiences I had was planting daffodil bulbs with kids under a tree. And it was like you said, like there. It takes such a small amount of investment to get them to go from ew to oh my goodness. And
exactly.
Then, and the problem with bulbs is they're done. And then you're like, okay, well, now we have to wait 6 months. Like, well, that's kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah.
So had I stayed in the in that form of a classroom, I think I would have done maybe a slightly more immediate return.
Well, that's part of the joy, I think, of having kids embrace gardening is the self-awareness that it brings and the validation that it brings that they have these hidden skills, and to take a tiny seed and nurture it into a living plant that then will feed you, you know, it's just wonderful. It's a process that every kid should have the experience, or at least the availability of the experience. And so that's part of the reason we did the curriculum, was, you know, to make it accessible for teachers, because typically, you know, school garden programs fall on the shoulders of the teachers to execute, and they've got a pretty full load. And so this program is to help them work it into their core curriculum studies, because then they see the reason for doing it. You know, it's not just another burden to take on.
Right.
And so it's been successful in that respect. We've had lots and lots of downloads.
Great.
And both of you, this is a question for both of you. Did you come to this point in your career because you started gardening at a young age and you recognized the influence that somebody had on you? Or how did you find your way here? I'll ask you first and then I'll come to you, Ethne.
Sure. I've been working the land since I was a baby. My dad's a farmer. And he is an organic farmer, and I grew up doing that work. He founded an organization in Boston called the Food Project, which integrates inner-city kids, high school students with more rural students. And then for the last 10 years, I've been working in cities and more rural areas around the country, developing my agricultural skills. And really, it was brought to this school in particular in Bushwick because of the incredible energy of the students that I met at the school and the vision of the organization, which is really connecting culture and food, and really the intersections that race, class, gender have with food for everyone. Mm-hmm. That it's this unifying core that we all have. And just like you said, that, you know, everyone has that touch that is in them. So we really look at food as a holistic approach to finding the culture that's within all of us.
And how about you? How did you come to this?
My mother was the daughter of an Irish farmer in Kilkenny. And so she grew up on a large integrated farm, pigs eating the apples in the orchard, you know, fields of potatoes, blah, blah, blah. And so she clearly had the green thumb, which she passed on to me. And I have a photograph of myself as a small child watering my first bed of zinnias in our home in Park Forest, Illinois. And so it just stuck with me. And then we were talking earlier about bulbs. Mm-hmm, and another thing she did was teach me about sex by having me fertilize the bulb flowers to see, you know, it was breeding, you know, different kinds of bulbs. Well, all it succeeded in doing was having me kind of chop the heads off of all of her tulips when they came up, and we got nothing in return. However, I have this beautiful memory of it. So when I had my own son, and we moved from London out to Norfolk in rural England, I tried to introduce him to gardening, thinking, you know, it was such a great thing for me. Again, we were talking about this with you and your 18-month-old. And it was just delightful. First of all, he freaked out that he had all this space that he could run around in. And then he started helping me in the vegetable garden. Well, I was doing raised beds. Now, this was 1972 in England, and they all thought I was, you know, burying people in my garden. And it was very amusing. But my son came out and started helping by bringing his little cars and building roads through the beans that I had just sown. But I just couldn't discourage him because he was in the soil, hands down, having a ball, and creating what he later came to call Pathetic Island. So, so he's got his memory. So I think it's, you know, yeah, it starts in childhood by and large. Many of the people I've spoken to.
It's funny you mentioned the grave site because they ours are raised beds. So we built five of them, and they're 2 feet long by 4 feet.
There you go.
Or 2 feet wide by 4 feet long. And I joked that we should make like little tombstones and put like "Here lies Tatsoy."
Yeah. Yeah.
My in-laws who I share the
garden
with.
Is your place called Fargo by any chance?
No, it should be. It should be. Actually, people can see before the trees leaf out. They can see coming down the road that we are there, mm-hmm. and so I hang like brightly colored flags over the garden, and people always pull in and ask me questions. Yesterday, a man pulled in to ask me. I have chickens that you can also see from the road, and a man pulled in to ask me if I had any little chicks for sale that he wanted to bring one to his daughter, and I don't have any chicks, and I said, well, you know, I said you can order them by mail. That's how I got mine. And do you want adult chickens? Like, what are you going to do when they grow up? And he looked at me like, I hadn't even considered that. Like,
right.
And so I applaud that he was getting his daughter a chick, and she really, but I'm also glad I didn't have one to give him, because then in, you know, 8 weeks, adolescence is hard on everyone, and suddenly it's not a cute, fuzzy little yellow thing anymore.
And then, it might be a rooster.
And it could be a rooster, which I'm also dealing with on my own farm.
That's a problem.
He's a problem. He was so friendly. And then, like, he's on Memorial Day weekend, he'll be a year old. And in the last week, he's completely changed from docile and kind to
a juvenile delinquent.
Juvenile delinquent. Chased my son and I across the yard and then held us hostage in the house. Yep. And just, like, paced back and forth by the door. And I called my husband. I was like, you need to come home. We need to have coq au vin. Right now.
Oh, no.
It hasn't happened yet, because it turns out that it's an incredible undertaking to get rid of a rooster.
Because nobody wants them.
Nobody wants them. I'm happy to... I was joking with my friend that I'm just going to post an after picture of my food, my coq au vin braised rooster when it's done. Because if I post a before and an after picture, which is what I want to do, I'll get a ton of emails about how cruel I am. When the reality is, this guy is mean.
They're mean. They are. They're very protective.
Very protective, and not of me. So back to both of your programs. I think anyone that's ever learned how to do anything would say that hands-on learning how to do something is far more interesting than learning from a book, cooking, gardening, whatever it is. And I'm wondering how you extrapolate that out into their long-term, like, how do you see that in older kids who have learned from a young age how to identify the parts of a seed? Like, it's easy to see it in an immediate way, but what is some of the feedback you get from older kids that have gone through your programs or similar, like the magazine work that you had them do, Ethne?
Well, I think it helps them understand that gardening is not rocket science. Working in the soil and making something grow doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out. And, you know, you just have the confidence of knowledge. And I learned by watching my mom and the gardeners that helped me as I grew up. But in the end, you know, I needed a formal education, so I went off and did a horticulture degree. And that kind of gave me the why I do what I do. and that, that there's a certain way of doing it for guaranteed success. So I think it's just the foundation, and you just build on the foundation in whatever direction you want to go in, be it fruit growing, becoming a vegetable gardener, CSA, or just growing a beautiful ornamental garden mm-hmm. for your home. So,
and Maggie, you mentioned that your older kids are getting trained to do community chef. Mm. They do cooking demos, and they are doing policy speeches, right?
Yeah. We really create a lot of avenues into their future. We're creating leaders. So even though we know that not all of the students we work with are going to be gardeners or farmers, but the food system is so broad and so complex that there are so many places that they can feel, you know, that they have a voice. And I think for us, you know, part of that is the farmers markets that EcoStation runs. We run 5 farmers markets in Bushwick itself. And the high school students run those markets, so they learn marketing techniques. They also do cooking demos. So for some of our students, they want to go to culinary school. They want to, you know, go in that field. For other students, they're interested in carpentry. So we create more avenues where they can apprentice with carpenters and really build up those skills, building sheds, building.
I have about 30 more raised beds that need to be built if you want to bring them out to perfectly.
And then awesome. They can come out my way.
Wonderful. No, it's true. And I mean, those are skills that they see. You know, we show them that it's a needed skill through working with other organizations and they're building gardens on their places. And then, you know, they take it in whatever route they really feel is necessary in their life. But I think also the policy work that we're doing right now, some of our students are interested in food policy. And so their advice was, let's create a youth food policy council. So we have a youth food policy council on campus with 14 students. And right now we're tackling universal free lunch campaign in New York City. So we're trying to get all the council members and the mayor on board to give free lunch for all. And so that's been a really exciting process for our high school students to go to City Hall, to meet the mayor, to do this like very calculated campaigning work so that they can apply that to not only food work, but also other endeavors, you know, around battling poverty and, you know, whatever they're really interested in.
That is so, I mean.
Yeah, and it all extends out into business then, doesn't it?
Very much so, yeah.
You know, because I know that one of Meredith's classes started doing a program about composting. And the school governors were kind of like, why do we need to do this? Or somebody. Anyway, the end result was that the kids put together a PowerPoint presentation about composting and invited these people to come and sit and listen. And they did this very professional business presentation. And everybody walked out going, oh, of course.
Sold. Compost. Yeah.
So it's all
and those skills
so
are
many
so applicable.
No kidding. I mean, it's
the PowerPoint
that's what's
presentation.
Awesome.
Right
yeah,
there. And they're
right
learning there. That in middle school. I
and
mean,
they're
that's
learning it
be
like with a practical application. It's not just sitting through here, like make a PowerPoint presentation. It's
no.
like, we need to sell these people on our idea. Here's a tool that we can do it with. And then learning the PowerPoint is like just an addendum to getting learning how to get your point across. Which,
definitely.
I mean, I still haven't learned Excel because I haven't had a really good reason to, despite all of the classes that tried to teach it to me in high school.
We could use it for planning your 30 raised beds.
Right, sure.
But I think something that's also really important in Bushwick, you know, we're here in the radio station here, and this is a area of New York City that has a huge population of immigrants. And for those immigrants, you know, they're in school and they are learning English at the same time as trying to pass Regents. And for a majority of our students at the high school that we're working with, this is a reality. And for them, the farm, you know, the hands-on components enables them to learn English better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they
mm-hmm.
can, they really want to communicate about the work that they're doing at the farm. They want to communicate at the markets. So they are learning English in that context. And I think that's just a whole nother level of
wonderful.
Not only science, you know, in the classroom or art in the classroom, but for the ESL students, the hands-on work is so important.
Right. I mean, I've heard if you want to learn a language, go live in the country. If you want to learn French, go live in France, because that's how you'll learn it out of necessity when you have to figure out how to get home or whatever.
Definitely,
it is.
Yeah.
We have to take a break, but I'm hoping you'll stay here. And I have some practical gardening questions for you when we come
Excellent.
Back.
Love it.
Okay.
When gardening is part of your life, it brings so much. Healthy eating, the freshest, most local produce, and playing in the dirt. At BonniePlants.com, you'll find all you need to succeed. When you grow Bonnie veggie and herb plants in beds or containers, you'll know where your food comes from. Homegrown veggies and herbs ready for cooking, eating, and enjoying. And you did it. So get growing with Bonnie Plants.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson. We are broadcasting to you live on Heritage Radio Network from Bushwick, Brooklyn. With me in the studio is Ethne Clark, Editor-in-Chief of Organic Gardening Magazine, and Maggie Cheney, the Director of the EcoStation in New York and Bushwick Campus Farm. Sometimes I very logically and in an organized way have questions to ask of my guests. These are gardening questions that are very specific that I've collected a little bit over just over time. But so I'm just going to throw some of them out there and you guys can answer them. You, Ethne,
this is like Groucho Marx. the duck's going to come down.
Well, you said before the break, you said you got a master's degree in horticulture and learned that there was a foolproof method. I'm like, we could talk the rest of the show about what that is.
I never said that, did I?
It doesn't exist.
All right, it doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't. It's all hit and miss. Trust me.
All hit and miss in my backyard. Okay, so let's see. I'll start with my husband's question specifically, and you can both chime in. He wants to know how you feel about liquid fertilizers and what is your favorite liquid fertilizer in terms of soil amendment. And I guess I'll ask questions backwards, but I'll also ask you about soil testing and how do you know what your garden needs in the first place.
Seaweed emulsion.
Okay.
Yes, that's my go-to liquid soil amendment, plant food, everything. It makes the best plants, it makes the best soil. And if you've got that, you've got health and you've got pest resistance, disease resistance. You know, a healthy plant is a happy plant, just like people, right?
Right, yeah.
So that's seaweed emulsion, yeah.
And are you guys using fish emulsion?
We do a combination. We use seaweed, but we also add fish emulsion as well. So the combination. And then we also do worm compost teas. So, and that's always a great thing to do with kids too, to add to that curriculum.
Will you explain are there worms in the tea? Is it just, it's worm compost turned into tea?
So the process is you can get a 5-gallon bucket at Home Depot. You fill it with dechlorinated water. So that can be water that just sits out for 24 hours. You add a large 2 handfuls of worm castings. So that's the soil that is, you know, after the worms have, you know, eaten and everything. It's their castings.
Which is
the poop.
Okay. The poop. We're all adults here. We could say poo.
So you've got that rich soil, hopefully without the worms in it, although there may be a few and, you know, they're tiny. And so you put that in the water and you add some sugar to feed the bacteria in there. And so we use molasses. And so you mix it up all together, add an aerator, and it sits for around, you know, ideally at least 24 hours to 48 hours.
Okay, so quick. It's fairly quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're making your own fertilizer, and that you have to dilute because it can be quite strong. So then you dilute it and you spray it on your plants, the leaves of the plants, or you can add it just to the soil.
Do you want to just say, because you mentioned aeration and how important that is?
Yeah.
So because it can be unsafe, can it not be, if it's not properly aerated? I've heard that some toxicity exists in compost teas, various kinds.
It depends. I mean, I think compost tea is it's a world of its own. You have many people doing different types of teas. Some of them are more anaerobic-like in the case of some. But this is aerobic, which you would need an aerator, like a bubbler that you could buy at an aquarium store.
Right,
little fountain thing, tiny. You could also stir it really frequently. And that's another way to go around it. But it is important that you're adding air to that, and so it doesn't get stagnant. And you're feeding, you know, the biology in there also needs that oxygen.
Mm-hmm. What the question about health actually is another question on my list. We have chickens and we compost their manure into our compost system and it's excellent. And I'm wondering if there's a, is there a way, is it necessary to test to make sure that you've killed any bacteria that's coming from the chicken poo before I put it on my basil?
I don't know, but I've used chicken poo as a compost starter whenever I've had chickens. It's magic. And I figure that it gets hot enough that any nasty bacteria will be wiped out by the heat. I mean, that's the whole theory of composting anyway.
And it depends, like, if you're working into the soil, you know, you're not eating the soil with your plants often. You know, you're cutting the above plant unless it's carrots, you know, and then you'd want to maybe make sure it's extra clean. But you could, I mean, if you were concerned, you could send the soil to a lab. They could do an analysis for you. We've done that with our compost just, you know, because we want to figure out exactly, you know, how stable and how nutrient rich it is. So you can also search for things. But generally speaking, I think you're right on where it's compost is compost. And, you know, if you have a diverse pile and it heats up, you're good.
Right, right.
A similar question was asked of me. I sell eggs, or I should say I give my eggs away in exchange for a $5 donation to the chicken feed fund, because I'm not technically allowed to sell them. so it's a whole other conversation. But somebody asked me, like, well, how do you guarantee that nobody gets sick from your eggs? And I was like, I've raised chickens my entire life, and I have eaten eggs every day for almost 35 years, and I've never gotten sick from an egg. I mean, knock on wood, but.
You know, I just, sometimes people get a little over anxious. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an old saying that I was brought up on that you have to eat a peck of dirt in your life. Because, yeah. And now it turns out dirt's good for you. Yeah, you know, it has the little things in the soil that make you happier, you know, a natural Valium kind of thing. You know, and I'm like,
no wonder.
Okay,
see,
I get it.
The meditation app that I downloaded. It's a day in my garden yesterday. That's why I feel so much better.
Yeah, good.
Lick your finger after you've been digging.
I watch my kid run around and, you know, he's definitely tasting exactly the little mustache.
Ring of dirt.
Little ring. Or he's taken to taking handfuls of dirt and putting them down his back inside
so
of his t-shirt.
Very
and
nice.
I guess it's cool or something. I can't. I mean, I just let him do what he wants to do.
Yeah,
I let
him
be creative. And
you'll be happy.
Yeah,
I think that, like, the, you know, general society in the United States and elsewhere has just become very disconnected to soil and to food and are afraid of things they don't know about.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's just a lot of hesitance towards germs in general.
It's not only that they don't know about it, but they're being fed information by pharmaceutical companies that are saying these things are bad.
Exactly.
And that's where their education's coming from. And it's so out of whack.
And that's where, you know, there needs to be more and more education, grassroots education by the people on the ground to really kind of fight that messaging that's coming from, you know, the big corporate world. You know, that it's so great to have, you know, soil in a little bit of your food. You know, it's great to have fresh food from a chicken and you shouldn't be afraid of it.
Right.
You know, the more and more we can have these, you know, educational opportunities on the ground in community gardens and learning from elders who haven't been brainwashed in the same way.
And who survived
to
be elders.
It's true. You know, but it's important things.
It's common sense, isn't it? I mean, for heaven's sakes.
I could talk to both of you for another 2 hours. This is absolutely wonderful and fascinating, and I'm really, really glad to have you both here. You have, Maggie, you have a Kickstarter program for your Farm in the Sky about to start, right? Do you want to give us 30 seconds on that?
Sure. Yes, we're trying to launch in the very beginning of June. And this is a Kickstarter that we're running to support the Farm in the Sky project, which is a rooftop farm in Bushwick run by our youth. So it's a DIY rooftop. It's not the entire membrane large infrastructure that we see at some other very successful rooftop farms. But this one is something that anyone could do at their rooftop, on their stoop, you know, on their deck, these models that are very replicable. And we're raising money for stipends for our youth because we run a job program in the summer. So look out for that. We're going to be making a video in the next couple of weeks and launching.
Make sure you share it with me and I'll put it up on our website. Make
Wonderful.
Sure that everybody.
And ditto with organic gardening.
Great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Great. At OG sure. Mag, we Twitter like mad.
And that's I checked on your website. You get a free garden planner if you subscribe to Organic Gardening Magazine at organicgardening.com.
Yep. Free app.
I hope you both will stick around for a tour of the Roberta's Farm operation that we have going here. And listeners, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Sharp and Hot. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Just search for Sharp and Hot and give us a 5-star review while you're over there.
Great.
Thank you, as always, to Jack, our engineer, and our supporters. And next week, a lineup of women butchers and sausage makers. Tune in for that. And until then, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.